If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we're talking all about two big non-Bravo reality show seasons that we got last Friday and that have been making waves online all week. Season 8 of Netflix's Selling Sunset and the first season of Hulu's Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. So joining me to discuss both of those seasons is Kate Casey, who hosts the fantastic podcast Reality Life with Kate Casey, which is all about reality TV, but also generally unscripted TV. So she's really an expert in the area. So I thought she was a great person to invite on to talk about some non-Bravo stuff. And we come from two differing points of view, particularly on Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. And so I really loved it and she sees potential in it, but she did not love this first season. So it produced a great conversation about it, honestly. Like, I kind of like when we disagree a little bit. And we spent a little bit more time on Secret Lives. So I did want to share a few updates and thoughts on this season of Selling Sunset before we jump into the chat, because we talked about Selling Sunset. It was kind of like rambling all over the place. It's still a fun listen, but we didn't like take it like beat by beat, like I usually try to do with an end of season deep dive. This is more of just like a discussion overall. So first of all, we know now that there will officially not be a reunion for the season, and they did not film a second season back to back with season 8 this time, which is what they tend to do on Selling Sunset. Like either you know they're going to have a reunion, or you know that they have also filmed a second season. They have like another season in the bank that they'll put out like with a little bit less of a wait time, but with nothing in the bank, we know that we won't get any sort of resolution for the season and what's gone down both on and off camera for quite some time. And who knows who's going to come back at this point, given everything that's gone down. So to me, like, this is extra annoying because even though the show does love to end on a season cliffhanger, we usually know that we'll be getting either a reunion or a subsequent season. So it's like the only way to really get any follow-up information right now is either if like you're keeping track of all the cast members' Instagram stories or like you're diving into any press they're doing. But like, It's just kind of a weird bad look, I think, for the show. And it's just really messy. And also to me, like, the finale was extra cliffhangery this time, because usually they at least have like a finale party where everyone gets together and you have like some final, even if they're quick, final conversations between people that are having conflict that season. But we had no final showdown between Chelsea and Bree and Chriselle and Emma as they pertain to that conflict between Chelsea and Bree. We had no resolution on Nicole bringing up an apparent rumor that Emma had slept with a married man, even though she had just begun to spread it throughout the group without Emma's knowledge. And so it just felt anticlimactic. And that's also what Chriselle is so upset about on Instagram, because Nicole, who Chriselle already hated, is bringing up this defamatory rumor about Emma on camera, which, okay, like, to me, that is classic reality TV. It's a you know, you bring up something that the other person does not want to discuss, and then you force them to discuss it. And it sucks. Like, it sucks to bring something like that up on camera, but like, that's how the game of reality TV is played. And I do feel like the Selling Sunset stakes like continue to sort of get higher, and like, they continue to sort of pull pages from the Housewives Handbook. But how it's not played is somebody bringing up something like that on camera, and the other person who it's about never knowing about it, never being asked about it, never being confronted about it in a scene, never being asked about it in a confessional, and only finding out about it when the cast got their screeners a few days before the season even hit Netflix and hit the public. And I don't think it's coincidence, honestly, that Nicole never brought it up to Emma's side of the group. Chelsea didn't know that she was bringing it up. Chriselle didn't know she was bringing it up. And obviously Emma didn't. So it's sort of like, now this rumor's out there, Emma has not had a chance to address it on the main platform. Like, she can post an Instagram story and that will be picked up by media outlets, but like, it's not on the show. So the casual viewer is never going to see that. You know what I mean? So after all the cast got the screeners a few days before it came out, Chriselle went to her Instagram story. She tagged production. She tagged the producer. She tagged the production company. She tagged Nicole, all them. And she basically slammed the move and said she never filmed with Nicole ever again. So she is very forcefully playing their hand. And I mean, she's strong-arming production, which is a tough, I mean, it's a strong move and it's a tough thing to do. And who knows how it'll play out. I mean, it's hard to imagine the show without Chriselle, like if they feel like they can just move on without her and not kind of play by her rules. But also, like, she kind of has been the face of the show for 8 seasons in a lot of ways. So it's interesting. That's something that Kate and I talk about a little bit in our chat. And then the last thing is that Bryce Sander at ET did a bunch of cast interviews after the season. And here are a couple takeaways that I had from those interviews. Chelsea basically won't talk about her divorce on a mic, which is a little lame to me as a reality star, as much as I like her. And, you know, he asked her, like, would you ever film with Brie again, or would you ever film with Nicole again? And she was like, you know, I'm not in the business of making ultimatums like that. Like, this is my job. But to me, like, also being part of the job is like opening up about what's going on in your life. And to me, the way that she basically said no comment to Bryce throughout the entire interview, it confirms to me that if Brie had not filmed with Amanda and Amanda had not brought up the alleged cheating that her husband had done on camera, and then, you know, there had been that whole fallout, I don't think Chelsea would have brought up her divorce at all. I don't think she would have discussed it. I think she would have been asked about it in a confessional. She would have said no comment, which kind of feels a little unfair, you know? Like, I mean, we saw Chriselle go through the whole thing, I think in season 2. We've seen other people go through splits. So it's like, why would she have gotten to sort of walk around it? In Bryce's interview with Brie, she said that she doesn't have a problem with Chriselle, but she doesn't know where they stand. And Chriselle kind of said the same thing, but she also said that she has sort of like taken a knowing step back from Brie and their friendship. And then Brie also said that she did not know that Amanda would be bringing all of those receipts to the scene they were filming. She said she had heard the rumor, but she had not seen the evidence and heard more of those details. And then she did say that, because, you know, in the finale, there's that scene where Nicole brings up the Emma rumor to Brie. And so they sort of made it look like Brie believed it and was intrigued by it. Brie told Bryce that she did not believe it, and that's why she never brought it to Emma. And she was kind of annoyed that they made it look like she believed it. And then, you know, there's just like a lot of power playing on this cast right now, which, again, as you'll hear in my chat with Kate, like, even though I like a lot of these women, like, I like a lot of this cast, I don't know them except for Chriselle, but none of them are irreplaceable from a production standpoint. You know, like, think about how many people they've swapped in and out on the show over the years. Like, I don't know, if you had thought like after the first couple seasons of the show that it would ever exist without Christine Quinn, you probably didn't think that was possible, right? Like, she was so integral to the first couple seasons, but they have really successfully pivoted away from her and kind of replaced her with really compelling personalities like Chelsea and like Brie. I'm just curious how they react to, you know, how intense Chriselle has been and sort of that hard line she's drawn in the sand. But yeah, you know, you realize on a reality show, nobody's bigger than the show. And maybe, you know, again, maybe things will mellow out and Chriselle will walk some of it back. But she seemed really annoyed, really, really angry. And then on the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives side of things, Whitney is really unhappy with the show since watching it and has been going off in the comment section and on TikTok. And the rest of the cast seems honestly pretty united against her. They seem to all kind of be pretty much on the same page, other than like a couple of grievances. Like, they seem to be kind of riding the wave and loving the attention and kind of unbothered. So I don't know. I mean, Michaela has been posting some great receipts and shady stuff on TikTok and on her Instagram story. So that's kind of been fun to keep track of. But that's fun because it's a first season thing, you know, like it's pretty superfluous. And I do hope that Whitney's not scared away from the show. So that's kind of like an iffy thing, I think, in my mind. But otherwise, like they're just kind of carrying on and basking in the attention from the show. Still no word on a season two renewal, though, which is annoying to me. Anyway, keep listening for my chat with Kate Casey all about Selling Sunset season 8, which is on Netflix now, as well as the first season of Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, which is also now streaming on Hulu. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back on Tuesday with an episode all about the state of the reality TV villain. I want to gab. Today we're gabbing with Kate Casey, host of the fantastic podcast Reality Life with Kate Casey. I've had plenty of podcast chats with Kate about Bravo, but Kate really is an expert in all things unscripted TV across the board. And so, you know, this past weekend we got two huge unscripted seasons, Selling Sunset season 8 and the first season of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Oh my God.
And so I have to have Kate on to discuss these two monumental seasons of reality TV. Kate, how are you?
We had a busy weekend.
We had a busy weekend.
Busy weekends. Yes. We had a lot of shit to watch. And I apologize to you because I've wasted the first 20 minutes of your morning because we were chatting before we even recorded because we go down that hole. I appreciate the fact that you talk so fast like I do. We had a lot of information done in a short period of time.
Listen, my brain's going faster than I'm even speaking.
So. Yes.
So I think we should start with Selling Sunset just because I think that's, it's honestly, there's less going on there, even though it is, I thought it was a pretty, like, it's a pretty big season for the show in several ways. So, yeah. You know, we know we're getting season 8 of Selling Sunset, premiere week starts, and then all of a sudden, like, shit kind of hits the fan around this show. Chrishelle and Chelsea, like, you know, they all get the screeners apparently, and they're on Instagram stories tagging production, saying they'll never film with Nicole again. This
By
is disgusting.
Way,
all this
bad move.
Just yeah, I mean, it's a lot of totally, and the public's hasn't seen the episodes yet, so it creates this sort of like anticipation and hype around what we're about to see. What did you make of all that noise? And once you saw this season, did it live up to sort of the heated nature among the cast that you were seeing?
No, but here's what we know to be true. Most reality stars lose their minds and they start to believe they're bigger than the show and the show exists without them. I mean, it's, you know, swap them out Menudo style.
Yeah, like it's like one-on-one.
You're not going to be here for a long time. Like, buckle up. So when they sort of start throwing their weight around, like, tagging a production company and a network.
Adding Adam DeVello. Like it was, it was a lot.
Fine, Irene, you're gone off the show and you're gone. You've lost your mind. Like, you know.
But do you think that Selling Sunset could exist without Chrishelle?
Of course. You could have Selling Sunset for 87 more series, seasons with a different person. It's like, come on. But they all kind of are like, well, I'm the show. It's the Teresa Giudice of it all.
Yeah,
we're like,
it is.
It's my show. I bet you Chrishelle is like, this is my show. I bet you Nicole is like, well, this is my show now. You know whose show it is right now? If you were going to like give it to someone, it's Chelsea.
This is Chelsea's season. Yeah, totally. And what's crazy about the Chelsea thing is that like, I'm so curious if Brie had not brought this Amanda character onto the show to bring up this rumor that she had seen Chelsea's husband making out with somebody in a hotel lobby. If that hadn't happened, I'm so curious if we would have even heard anything about Chelsea's divorce.
You would have never. No.
Yeah.
And that rumor was so stupid. It was like, well, my friend who's at the W Hotel,
right,
may or may not like have one eyeball, may have seen somebody like received a text from, I don't, you know, like what?
Yeah.
But clearly, like, you know, they haven't been in good terms for a long time because then she starts to cry. I mean, I'm glad she's not with him.
Me too.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's been in six
dark
episodes of Dateline. He is weird.
There's something weird happening there.
Also, like, she should not live in Manhattan Beach anymore. She needs to move on. She's bigger than Manhattan.
The end of the season, we see she is probably moving to LA.
Yeah.
But he's, and it's sort of like he had this I don't want to like compare these two because there's a lot of dark shit that happened with Christine Quinn and her husband. But like he also had this like really weird energy about him when we saw him on the show. And it just like,
I feel like he probably paints on his goatee. I mean, I'm not kidding you. He's a weird guy. Here's a weird dude.
Bizarre.
He's a weird
dude. One thing that I think made this season notable for Selling Sunset is that there's a lot of fourth wall breaking that happened in like kind of just throughout very casually because of basically the drama was that they, you know, Bree has this scene with this woman, Amanda, and the whole question is like, did she set it up? Did she
set it up
so that it could be brought to camera? But like the whole season though, Kate, they're talking about, you know, they're talking about filming the scenes and they hadn't really done that before on this show.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of thought they took it too far.
Oh, you think so?
I think they took it too far. Because it's not as fun. There is this little part of it where you're like, I still think it's campy, the idea of them showing up in bonkers outfits to sell a property that no one is going to end up buying. You know, like walking in like a woman of the streets who is pretending that the property that's $26 million is going to be bought in all cash from the person presenting themselves as a potential client. And like that is why I think it stands out on its own.
It's campy.
That's what makes it different. It's campy.
Yeah.
You take out that kind of real estate component and it's more about like, we're all just sort of influencers. That can be any show. So it's like,
right.
Listen, what's the point of Jason and Brett, make them one. Why not? They're twins. Jet Oppenheim. What's the point of them if this is all like, you know, like influencer wars?
But it's vanity. It's the same thing of Lisa Vanderpump of Vanderpump Rules these days. You know, it's just like they want to be there and they want to be sort of tangentially connected to it. But yeah, I think you're right. And it also is funny because in the early parts of the season, they tried to make Chelsea showing up with a really short skirt on to an open house like a plot point, a point of drama. And this was before the Nicole and Emma stuff. This was before the Chelsea and Bree stuff had really blown up. And so like you kind of saw what they were going to try to go for this season. And then it went a little bit of a different direction or the stakes were at least raised, you know?
But like if we were just like, this is the best, we have the best jobs in the world. Not just our jobs reviewing this stuff, but like everybody who sits on their couch, it's the most fun to watch these shows and rip them apart. Because if we were to be an outsider, if someone from Planet Zorb visited us for 5 minutes and we were like, so Brie has a baby with Nick Cannon, who is the host of The Masked Singer, and he's got all these kids,
50 kids,
and Brie gets mad because one of the other women say it's disgusting that she's partaking in a quasi cult. And she's mad at Chelsea for calling her the family dynamic disgusting. But Chelsea lives in Manhattan Beach and she's married to a guy who paints on his goatee. And we never see her children. And she's pretending that she sells properties in the South Bay. The people of Planet Zorb would be like, all right, we're going to park our spaceship and we're going to stay a little while. It is insane. And it's funny.
It is.
The best thing about those Netflix shows.
Yeah.
So easy to binge. And just as like at the end of your work week, that's what you want to tuck yourself into and watch. You're like this. You want to text your friends. You want to do screenshots, put it on your Instagram story and go, God, this is a good life.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yes.
Do you think that Nicole is as bad at reality TV as I think she is?
She's very clunky. She's not made for it. Go
She's
back and sell
it.
Some condos. You probably do a great job. But
yeah,
she seems distracted. Like, I'm like, did she just like,
she's not committed to the bit either. It's like she's kind of the villain. She's kind of the villain, but she doesn't want to be the villain. But like she totally is the villain, you know? It's like, whereas Christine Quinn is like so game to be it, you know? Nicole is like,
yes,
she wants to be Kreshel kind of thing. Like the
she wants
golden
to be
child.
Kreshel. She's not Kreshel.
Oh my God,
she's
beyond.
Not Kreshel.
No.
But she also seems like she's doing shots of like Benadryl before scenes. It's like something's happening. I don't know what is happening, but something's happening. It's a situation if I've ever seen it. Mike Sprint,
the scene
you know?
In the office when they kind of it all comes to a head about like Kreshel thinking she's homophobic and then Jason like hugging Nicole from behind when she breaks down into tears. Wild TV, wild television.
Jason and Nicole standing next to one another at any point is very strange to me because he's so much shorter than her. And it almost seems like she's the substitute teacher at like a middle school. I don't know. It's like she doesn't fit into the school and he's the star student.
Right.
And he's on the basketball team, but he shouldn't be on the basketball. I don't know. It's a lot.
There's something odd. And then we have this new one, Alana, who is like just, again, interchangeable with so many people. But I don't know if you saw this. So there's this weird
thing. I was just going to tell you. I just saw it. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us.
Well, she's told us on the show. Again, yeah. This is such a superb binge watch, stupid, yes, funny, over-the-top campy show. She takes us on a tour of Pioneer Town, which I was unfamiliar with, but now I know it is in the middle of absolutely nowhere.
It's a movie set in like the desert.
It's
basically
a movie set.
Yeah.
And she claims that she owns the town, which is just funny because there are like three stops. It's like pretending it's a general store is probably like just like a storefront. Like there's probably like sticks behind it.
Right.
And they've put out a press release today notifying the world that they have collectively come together to let everyone know that she does not, in fact, own the town of Pioneer Town.
It says, Mrs. Gold has a small minority non-controlling interest in an entity that owns 6 of 35 parcels in the Main Street area. Consulting of less than 1% of Pioneer's town total 640 acres.
That's savage.
Savage, like that's kind of the controversy I didn't know I needed, you know, like
I know I but like this the camping between that and I watched The Perfect Couple last night on Netflix. I don't know what to do with myself.
The future of Selling Sunset, Kate, I feel like,
yeah,
I mean, you kind of just said it. I feel like in your mind it's sort of like it's this ratings juggernaut for Netflix. Everybody watches it sort of mindlessly, and anybody could be on the show, essentially, in your mind.
Yes, anybody can be on. Yeah.
Okay.
You could, if you would like to be an agent, you could be fantastic. You could be on it.
Listen, I mean, Brie at the very end brings this Amanda person to the office. So like, you know, now she's going to be on the show next season. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's sort of, they kind of rotate people in and out of the show every couple seasons. And
you know what I think is going to happen? Remember they renovated the office to make it a nightclub? Because, you know, when you want to go out for drinks, you go on the Sunset Strip to a real estate office.
Yeah.
They should have parties and Jet, collectively, the Siamese twins, they could be the DJ of the nightclub that is the realty company. And that's where they start to cast the new real estate agents, because there are people who are out of work actors and they need to make some income. And so there's going to be on-site training. And you're going to go from like being a stand-in in a soap opera to selling a $14 million property in an easy four-month process.
And what's great about that is that, you know, they wear the same outfits to their work as they would to a nightclub. So it's perfect. I mean, dual purpose. All right. So I think that's enough for about Selling Sunset. Let's go to Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, which I want to know.
Yes.
I've been saying, for me personally, this is one of the most compelling new reality shows in years. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that statement?
Not the way that it was filmed. I think that it'll probably be better seasons 2 or 3. It's going to be like, remember when Alex Baskin talks about how Evolution took over Real Housewives of Orange County in season 2, and it was really clunky and bad and boring. And there was like, you know, a reunion in the grotto in Vicky's backyard. It's going to be like that.
But did you think the show was clunky and boring?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't at all.
For the first part of the show, I think that they must have sold it based on the swapping story. And
the
pilot was probably what they originally sold. And then I think the other swapping couples, the other two, refused to participate.
Right.
And then Taylor, they've got to go with because she's at the center of it.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh shit, can you get the other girls that like to TikTok in the background? Can they do the show? And they joined and they were clunky and like, you know, weird on camera. And it took a beat for them to get in the swing of it. So you have like compelling first episode. Episodes 2, 3 into 4 are boring. And then you kind of got some more stuff. But it feels right now, the way it was paced was very Teen Mom meets Real Housewives for me. And I feel like they need to have someone a la Chris DeRosa, someone like that. And Chelsea Devonta says the same thing, who does a better job of getting more out of them because they smooth over a lot of stuff.
Hmm.
Like, I want to know, are you concerned about the stuff that you talk about? Are you going to get a call from the ward, from a bishop?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Get into the nuggets and like
the specifics.
Their dynamics of their marriage, like what Connor's invited to things, but he was like on Tinder, but like you judge all the women. Like there's so many layers that I felt like they smoothed over. Macy, I interviewed I said this in my podcast today. I interviewed her and I found this article where it said that she, the father of the first baby,
died in a car accident. Because she's a crazy story.
Yeah, but then I interviewed her and I said, I read this article. Can you just walk me through like what happened when you were first pregnant? And she just said, yeah, I got pregnant and I was at BYU and I was a tennis player, but you know, it was okay because they understood and then it was fine. I'm like, so then I go, oh my God, I read the wrong article. So I didn't push forward because I'm like, oh my God.
Maybe you misinterpreted it, right?
Guess what? I look back and it happens. So I feel like that kind of is a snapshot. Like they smooth over and I don't know, it's a cultural thing, but they need somebody who goes right in. I need like real nuggets of stuff.
Yeah, I get that because I just feel like, I mean, I did enjoy the show, but I mean, it's like sort of compelling that there's so many factors that make it interesting and like potentially like
exclusive.
It's like Mormonism, mommy influencers, swinging. There's a domestic violence arrest that happens in the first episode. The gender dynamics are from decades ago. Young moms who are already on their second marriages, you know, the whole Whitney video that she posted in the NICU with her baby.
And also, like the classism, Jen Affleck's mom is working at the hospital.
Her mom is a cleaning woman at the same hospital that her father-in-law is a surgeon at, which is wild.
A weirdo. That's the story I would follow. Like if I would be that girl's producer and I'd say, okay, let's follow that. And by the way, can I meet your mom? And I want to meet the father-in-law because what? And can we get like a family party where we see the mom who's the janitor and like, do they talk or is this guy like a complete asshole?
Totally.
And he like feels like he's dude. And by the way, stop talking about, you know, the Afflecks of LA.
It's Jen Affleck on
clearly screen. Have no idea who you are.
They all get their first name on their screen, except for Jen and Zach Affleck, who it's Affleck every single time. You know, yeah, I kind of feel like that. The reason why I was sort of surface level in a lot of topics was because, I mean, we're introducing eight cast members in eight episodes.
Yeah.
You know, it's who all, a lot of them look the same, you know, which doesn't help. So it's sort of like, it's a lot.
Well, two in particular.
It's a lot to mine.
Jesse and Demi look similar to like, okay. Wait, do we know about Demi? I mean, I know you uncovered how I like, you know, okay. But the fact, this is the story I chase too. The fact that her husband, who's 46 years old, is like this beloved person because he was the quarterback of BYU like two decades ago. Like that to me is hilarious.
It's very small town. It's very small town.
Wait, why aren't her 20-year-old friends like, why are you married to a guy who's 20 years older?
And he's hot.
46-year-olds. Yeah, I think the 20-year-olds would be like, maybe he's hot for 3 minutes. And they're like, wait, what? Does he have to come to our parties? And then the 46-year-olds that he's friends with are like, you're dumb, 26-year-old white. Like, come on. That the generational differences. Chase that story.
Yeah, no. Listen, I think there's a lot. That's why it's so exciting to me, this show. It's because there's a lot that like was not talked about or uncovered.
You're thinking like a producer. You're like, oh my God, okay, season 2, season 3.
For sure.
That's how I think too.
But I did think that like, I did think that some of them really grew as reality stars. And I actually think that some of them, like to me, Taylor, she's essential for the show in that she is just like, basically like, she's compulsively honest. She can't help herself but share every detail of every fight she had with Dakota or when she got arrested or like, it's like,
yeah,
she's an open book in a way that's like, she can't even help herself in some ways. Like, and stuff is like happening to her in her life. And it's like,
you know where that stems from? Her mother.
Yeah, her mother is wild.
A Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reject. Like they would never hire her.
Yeah.
But she wants to be on. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very much like Monica Garcia's mom.
Have you looked at yourself in the mirror, lady? Like you look insane.
The extensions, Kate, they were tough.
And she's like, wait, like, you know, the cameraman like pack it up. She's like, wait, we're finished filming. Wait, do you want to get me on the patio?
Right. The 11th month time jump between episodes 1 and 2. Did, for me, that I was just shook because it sort of reminded me of Catherine Dennis season 1 of Southern Charm at the very end where they say 9 months later and she has a baby with Thomas Ravenel.
I don't like it.
You don't like it. Why not?
No, I don't like it. I feel like the real good stuff would have come right after.
My reason.
And when he's like, hey, I was just in Hawaii for a while. Wait, what?
I've seen hints like on different Reddits and things that Taylor basically had like a mental breakdown after the arrest. And like, I bet you they couldn't get her to film. That's kind of what I think. And so it's you to figure everything out.
I think the other swinger couples were like, we're not going to film this show. And they're like, we went to Netflix.
But they weren't in the pilot though.
Or Hulu. We went to Hulu and we convinced these people, no, we're going to get them. It's going to be Swap Town USA. And then they're like, shit, well, now what is this show? And I think they scrambled for a while. This is my...
That's your theory. That's your working theory.
Thank you, theory. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I just liked how a lot of them were pretty green. And I actually think a lot of them thought the show was going to end up very differently than it actually ended up. Like when we did our interviews, they had not seen the episodes, right? When
you that's true.
Yeah. And so I kind of, and like Michaela, for example, who has a chronic skin condition, like it's, but it's kind of,
she's barely in the show.
They mention it, but like I saw some posts on Instagram where it kind of felt like she was like, here's what you didn't get to see. I think that she thought it was going to be a platform to share this thing about her chronic illness and talk about it. And
okay,
like,
but did she live in on planet Earth?
No, of course not. But I think it's like, it's just, I think that they had a different vision of what this would end up looking like.
Yeah, buckle up, folks, because that's what Real Housewives go through every
season.
But
that's what I think, right. But I think that that is like what makes it, like, they weren't really posturing as much for me on camera, because I think they thought it was going to be different.
Here's where it gets clunky. We live in a weird time because a lot, you know, they went back and they tried to convince the OG Mormon influencers years ago to be a Real Housewives or any other reality show. And they realized they're like real boring because those people are very good at curating 15 minute seconds, you know, second little videos where everything looks perfect and shiny, but they're actually quite boring. And I think right now they're kind of boring. So they may need to swap a couple out.
Yeah.
If you think like you're going to be on a show and your platform is you've got some skin issues, like,
right.
Wait, what? Like, that's not reality TV, friend. Like, that's a documentary that airs on like some surgery channel.
Okay. So who in your mind, Kate, were the best, most promising reality stars from this first season?
Well, I do think that Whitney for sure is. She's the Janet of the Valley. She is the girl who was in the video dancing next to the baby who had RSV.
She's the unwitting villain role, basically.
And she doesn't care because she's a highly creative person who was the star of her high school dance team. And now she's living in the burbs with the guy that was on Tinder and some might say Grindr. Mm-hmm. And she's got these three kids and she's bored and she wants to be the star and be freed from this life that she knows. And right. She, I think, is angry that the others have more followers when she's like, I'm the real talent and let me show you how I can do this. Like, I don't know, one of those dance sequences.
Right. TikTok dance. Right. Yeah. Just
I don't know. Cha-cha, kickball chain. I don't know. So I think she's a star. I think that they say Macy's really sarcastic. I didn't really see it. I'd like for her to talk about the fact that she was texting with the first father of her child who died in a car accident. Like, I need more of that kind of stuff. Dakota.
Yeah.
And Nicole from Selling Sunset. They need to go out and have drinks. You know what I mean? Like, they have they're just not really, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. It's tough. It's tough.
That's tough to see.
That's tough to see. Dakota and Taylor, they're not going to last 3 seconds. But he wants to. Here's what I fear for the world. They want to do a spinoff like the Real Housewives of New Jersey called Dad Talk. Because these dudes that are in the background.
No.
I feel like they don't want to be in the background. They really love to be on TV.
Yeah, well, that's one of the biggest tensions that I think is really, let's unpack it more, is because these women are the breadwinners in these couples and these families, but within the Mormon
Church.
Which
I like.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, but it's in tension it's in constant tension with the expectation of the Mormon Church, which is like really backwards gender dynamics. And so like what I think is cool about these women is that like, yeah, some of them have really antiquated beliefs based on like what they basically have been indoctrinated with. But like, they're actually, some of them are making a lot more modern choices. And as a viewer, you basically want to push them over the ledge of like, yeah, keep going. You know, like with Jen Affleck, it's like they're all basically willing her to get divorced from this crazy guy, Zach. And it's like, and as a viewer, you're like,
to get divorced.
Yeah, go, girl, go. Like, you know, like buy your own house with the money that you made off of your own TikTok that you built. You know, it's like, that's what I think is really interesting. It's like they can be these like way more independent women, but like right as they take like two steps forward, they take three more back because they're like, oh wait, no, well, I'm not.
Somebody
supposed to
wrote
be like
me
this.
And they said it's so the astute observation. They were like, there's a spectrum of maturity,
for sure. And yeah,
here's the problem.
Sure.
Now they're famous, and so that's going.
How
to
does that affect
them.
It? Yeah. Well, I also think I'm curious what you think because like. You know, I think about Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, right? Which you brought up. And like, we were exposed to certain elements of what it's like to be Mormon and leave the church via Heather and Whitney on that show, two women who are in their 40s. And these women are mostly in their 20s and early 30s. And the ones that I kind of feel like are sort of further along in realizing sort of the backwards mm-hmm. nature of some of the church are the slightly older ones. So like Jessie, who's 31, 32, she to me is the one that's sort of at the forefront of that thinking, you know, in terms of like, wait, yeah. like fuck your husband. Like, you know what I mean? Like
she's to me more of like a real housewife.
Totally. But I kind of wonder if like in this community,
yeah,
it takes time for women to really kind of see the light and be like, wait, this is fucked up. Like I'm not being treated.
How could they? That's all they know. It's hard.
By the time you're Whitney and Heather's age though, it's like, maybe you see the light. Maybe you fully are like, well, fuck this.
I need Heather Gay to just like drop by.
Chime in.
I know it's not, it can't happen because of networks, but.
If she only had a podcast where she could talk about it.
I know. When I started watching it, when we all got sent it.
Yeah.
I text Heather and I said, I don't even know where to begin with this. And she's like, oh, I haven't watched it. I'm like, I said, I feel like this is just very teen mom. It's hard to watch because they're so young. And if they all just seem like they're just so. Lost. Like Layla just seems very lost. And I'm, you know, also Jen's husband, Zach, another thing I'm like, oh, the privilege on this guy
that guy is
married with
children
without an income. And she's paying for him to go to like, to be a doctor.
Medical school.
You know, my mom always said that my mom was married a couple times. She always said to us as kids, to my sister and I, never pay for a man's education. Never.
I believe
and I'm
that.
Like,
yeah.
Why? She's paying for his education. So he can make more money when he becomes a doctor.
Eventually, in 10
for
years.
A younger woman.
And also, he's simultaneously telling her, I don't care about Montauk. And he's also telling her, when they go to Vegas,
but he wants to be dad. He wants
you
dad
can't
talk.
Go. You can't go to the Chippendales. You can't set foot in that building, but I can gamble all your money away at the same time.
Oh,
at a
yeah.
casino.
We forgot about that. Yeah. How
like,
about
like
that?
I'm sorry.
How about
that? Fuck that noise. I'm sorry. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's maddening, but it's just, they're under a spell, some of these women, and it's really,
and
it's
I don't
hard.
Know if they're going to get out now, because when, listen, we've talked about it before. Once people get famous, they're gone. We've lost them.
But don't you think that like, but don't you think on the flip side of that, Kate, like now these women are going to be exposed to like other voices and other places and other people. Like they're going to go on like press tours in New York City and like talk to all these different people who are way more like progressive and liberal than they are. And do you think that could impact them in a positive way or no?
I mean, yeah, maybe. You know what? I think there's only one person in my entire time of interviewing a Real Housewife. It just occurred to me that I think will not change because of fame.
Who is that one person?
Kiki from Miami.
I could tell. That's it. That's I. She won't.
That's it.
Yeah. Wow. That's funny that you pinpoint Kiki as that. I mean, I think it's accurate about her. No, you're not wrong. It's just funny that
she
that's
would be
the
same
person,
person 20
mind.
Years from now.
Yeah, I totally agree. She's so authentic.
A movie star. That's it. That's it. Because they all like, get spoiled by it.
Yeah. I was talking to Dylan Hafer of Betches about the show. And we were saying that like there are little elements of this too that like we didn't really get to learn via Salt Lake City Housewives, but like
yeah.
even just learning about the little things about Mormon culture, like getting Botox all the time just so they can have tear gas and get high, or the sodas every day, the 40-ounce sodas at like the soda fountains where there's like all these crazy flavors that they have every day, the guided ketamine trips that were very casually alluded to once, the gambling of it all. Like there's so many little things that like basically they're kind of finding little holes in the rules to get their thrill, you know? And it's
yeah.
it's wild. It's wild to watch. Like just have a cup of coffee, you know?
Do you think that maybe there's a chance that they're going to go, Gibson, I want to come to the city for 4 days. And you're like, well, just stay with me in my apartment. And then you're like, I'm going to change your life, but we're never going to talk about it after this.
I'd love that.
I feel like that could be a program that you could sell.
I'd get all of my like craziest friends and just be like, let me blow your mind. Yeah.
Okay. This is the show I want to sell to Hulu.
Okay. We always come up with show ideas in these
we're
conversations.
So good. It's the Gibson Johns project.
Okay.
And
Rachel Zoe
is
shaking.
You take, and it's not specific to Mormons. It's anybody who comes from a very religious family and they stay with you for 4 days. It's no, it can't be more than 4 days.
Okay.
You know what? It may need to be three.
Okay.
It could be four. But you show them a good time. You take them to a restaurant, to a show. You take them on a walk through Central Park. You take them to a bar. Maybe they go to something at the Met.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out at the end of the week if they want to go back to their weird people.
And they're not going to want to.
They're not going to want to.
You know who might want to? Whitney might want to.
Whitney, my friend said she wants to be an actress.
Whitney on this show, Secret Lives?
Yes. Yes, yes.
Huh.
Which is reminds me of Melissa Gorga, who wanted to be a midlife pop star. It's like, look, I don't know how you're going to do that with the three kids that you're making like homemade animal crackers, but I don't know. Maybe it is possible because now that you have this platform, you know.
Listen.
I bet you Macy's going to be the new correspondent on Entertainment Tonight.
Macy has like a star quality to me.
Yeah.
The other one that I really, the one that I gravitated towards the most was Demi. I thought that she was the most dynamic on screen. I thought that she was gorgeous. I thought that she kind of vacillated between having more modern beliefs and not. And I thought that was, I don't know. There's something
you know
in her
like,
that I
though?
Liked.
It makes me sad. She keeps getting all this plastic surgery.
I mean, yeah. They all probably have had some work done.
Now, as a gay man, do you enjoy the scenes where they talk about the vaginoplasties? Are you like, why? Why do I need to know that?
Fascinating. I'm like, listen, like, you actually don't need to blur it for me. Like, this is not going to do anything for me.
Yeah. Well, I need you to know that straight women do not want to see their friends' vaginoplasties afterwards. Like, I was like, what? That we don't do that.
Well, it's because they're 24 and they're like fascinated.
They have nothing else to talk about.
Yeah. And it's. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other crazy part is that you're watching these women. You're like, oh, yeah, they're all in their 30s. No, they're 22 to 31. Yeah, that's the age range here that we're working with. So, yeah, I mean, the show is number one on Hulu. I'd be shocked if it didn't get a second season, but it's also like
second season. They're probably working the contracts for season four.
Right. But one of the last questions I want to hear from you is like, how does this affect them on the show? The success of this, seeing themselves played back for the first time on season one, do they all film very differently in season two, do you think?
Or well, like, yeah, I mean, you have to, but you got to get really good producers that can come in and like you get a showrunner like a Thomas Kelly, who is so good at really building a relationship with them and getting them to crack themselves open. But I think an honest discussion on the aftermath of being on a show like this, like,
right.
How does this affect the relationship that you have with your family to members of the church? Do you still see yourself as the person that you were going to be as a young girl? Like,
right.
Do you see yourself as a Mormon wife?
Right. Yeah.
And you know what? The reality is this might drive some of them way back into their faith.
I think, it's going to have one or the other.
Which is great. You know, I want to see that.
Totally agree. Like almost talk about the fact now you're public figures in a bigger way than just being a TikTok star, being on Mom Talk. Can Mom Talk survive this? That's the question.
But
of
I'm
our
telling
generation.
You can tell the difference between a great reality show and an okay reality show when the cast members, how much they open up. It has everything to do with the
producer.
Staff that you have, the producers who really make an investment well before filming into building a relationship.
And they basically feel like they're talking to their friend in the confessional, basically.
Well, they, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'll hear sometimes, like, the Miami wives, they're always saying, you know, the purveyors of pop team, they feel like family.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the good stuff.
That's why it's a good show. That's why it's a good
show. They invest in it, yeah. But if somebody just drops in, they're like, oh, I got this job on here for 3 weeks. I'm going to go to, like, do Diners and Dives on the Food Network channel. You can tell the difference.
Yeah. And this is also sort of why I just want them to jump back into filming again. I don't really want a reunion. I think the reunion would hammer home.
I don't
home
want
the fact
a reunion.
It would hammer home the fact that they're on a show and it wouldn't be natural for them. And I also don't trust any network that's not Bravo to do a reunion, right? So
I agree with you. Just
start filming season two immediately and just skip the reunion idea. Yeah.
I agree. That's the fun, is creating something that's so different than anything else.
Totally. Yeah. Don't try to replicate the formula.
If they had a reunion, Andy Cohen would be like, really?
Yeah, exactly. And it wouldn't be good. Like, it's just, it's not the same.
And then with like Dakota in standing behind.
Exactly. You know, like, and Zach probably wouldn't show up, to be honest. So,
You know what? I want to know in the aftermath if he is well aware of the people, the many people of the world who are now like, you're misogynistic. You're gross.
I hope he does, because then I hope he can treat his wife better. You know, it's like,
but again, he got married and has children, but he doesn't make any income yet. Like,
no. And his wife's paying for his med school.
That's privilege. Like, Oh, yeah, yeah. Like everybody else will take
having children when you don't have any income? Like,
because you know your parents are going to,
yeah,
that
family has a backing for him. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, Kate.
I mean, listen, must be nice, man. Can't, like, shouldn't you just put that on hold until, like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Put the kids on hold. Marriage, fine. But, like, kids? Wow.
Kate, this is fun.
Okay, you're going to do the Gibson Johns project?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, taking? Yeah. Let's get some funding, some production funding. Let's shop it to the networks.
I mean, that would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
So many shows I want to make now. I hope you keep starting, like, buy stuff, because it's like so many good shows or could be
so
made.
Many good shows could be made and they're not made.
Okay, I'm gonna leave you with this. I know you like sports. I think you need to watch The Money Game. It is on Amazon Prime. So there's this new law where college athletes can make money off their, you know, brand deals. And so they followed 6 athletes at LSU for the last academic year, including like Livy Dunn, who's the gymnast with like 15.3 million. My son, who's in 7th grade, is like, oh, like I have a huge crush on Livy Dunn. Like everybody who's young, like, loves her.
Wow.
And she made $1 million last year.
Wow.
Yeah. It's so here's my niece is in college and she is an intern at Fox Sports. I said, this is what you're going to do. You're not going to go and like think you're going to like be like a movie agent. The job to have now is to be the agent for the college athletes who are about to make crazy brand deals.
Yeah, poach some of those future stars. Yeah.
And by the way, she should do that with her friends who also want to be agents. And that's the show that I would make.
It's Selling Sunset, but of sports, agents. Yeah.
Sports agents. Yep.
Yeah. Kate, where can everybody listen to your podcast, to your plugs before we sign off?
Reality of Life with Kate Casey, everywhere where you listen to podcasts. Get the list of what to watch each week at katecasey.substack.com, Patreon episodes 2, Facebook group Reality of Life with Kate Casey, and follow me on social. It's basically at KKCCA or at KKC, whatever. Just put my name and you'll find me.
Great podcast. I love the newsletter. It gives me a lot of guidance on what to watch in the unscripted arena. So fantastic thing to subscribe to.
Oh, and there's
really
also
helpful.
There's a good true crime one too. Into the Fire, the Lost Daughter. Okay. This woman places her daughter for adoption and then finds out like 20 years later that daughter is missing. And in the process of trying to help figure out what happened to her, she figures out the person that killed her daughter, who's also a serial killer. It's on Netflix.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Another busy weekend ahead. Oh my God. Kate, thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll do this again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest bookings, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.